Good afternoon, listeners. Greg Silberman here for another episode, a riveting episode of CIOs and Bow Ties. I mean, it's just getting better and better. No disrespect to any of our previous guests, but on the line with us today, we've got Guy Kawasaki, a name I think many of you are familiar with. So, Guy, let me read your brief bio, but it certainly doesn't do you justice, but let's just cover this off. Guy Kawasaki is the chief evangelist of Canva, and we'll speak about that in a sec, an online graphic design tool, brand ambassador for Mercedes-Benz, executive fellow of the Haas School of Business, UC Berkeley, chief evangelist of Apple, where I guess many of you may recognize him from, trustee of Wikimedia Foundation, which I believe, if I'm not incorrect, is actually part of Wikipedia, correct, Guy?
Well, the Wikimedia organization is the parent of Wikipedia and all the other Wikipedia properties that are not the same name.
Got it.
So like WikiTravel, for example, is part of Wikimedia, even though it's not called Wikipedia Travel.
Okay. Well, I don't know I don't know how I would exist without Wikipedia right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. So yeah,
it's an amazing tool. He's the author of, I think it's 15 books at the last count, including The Art of the Start 2.0, The Art of Social Media, Enchantment. One that the listeners may recognize is The Macintosh Way. So I, believe it or not, do remember that book. And the latest book is called Wise Guy, which is really where our focus will be from here. So, Guy, I'm going to take a pause and just say, you know, congratulations on everything you've achieved to date and welcome to CIOs and Bowties.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Lovely. Okay, well, before we start, I'm just going to give you a one congratulations here and you know, a book that changed my life, and you know, I just want to give you kudos to that, and we'll give you a bit of a chuckle, I hope, instead of putting the phone down to me. But Rich Dad, Poor Dad, man, one of my all time favorites.
Are you being serious?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, ever since I wrote about it in the book, when people say that to me, I don't know if they really think I wrote the book, or they read my book, so they know why that's a joke.
Yeah, look, it did come up in conversation. A buddy of mine was saying, you know, he said, who have you got coming onto the show? And I mentioned your name, and he did say that. But anyway, well, let's forget about that. So listen.
All Asian names sound alike, too. We don't only look alike, we sound alike.
Yeah, just to clear the record for the listeners, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a title you're probably aware of, and that was written by, I think it was Robert Kiyosaki, if I'm
Kiyosaki,
not
Kiyosaki, yes.
Kiyosaki, there we go. Okay, not Guy Kawasaki.
I'm right. Poor Dad, Poor Dad.
All right, let's dive in here, guys. So, you know, you speak about in the book, coming from an immigrant background, I guess your parents came, was your parents or maybe your grandparents?
Grandparents.
That came from Japan. And I see a lot of similarities, frankly, with myself. You know, I'm a first generation immigrant to a country, but it definitely, I guess, getting raised by immigrants or, you know, being an immigrant yourself, you definitely see the world through a different lens and get to appreciate things differently. So how would you comment about that?
Well, a couple lessons here. So my grandparents came from Japan, and one lesson there is, you know, if you're stuck in a bad situation, make a change. So they didn't just change careers, you know, or change cities, they changed countries. And that is a, you know, that's a bold move. I can't tell you that I could change country. So, you know, that's pretty bold. And that changed the arc of my life. Had they not left Japan, well, I could make the case I wouldn't exist because I might have, you know, become a speck of dust in Hiroshima.
Well, you mentioned that we're from Hiroshima, right?
Yeah. So, you know, that is funny how a nuclear weapon can just ruin your whole day. So, So that's one thing. And it's a very important lesson. And I think it's particularly important in the United States today that we're going on this anti-immigration nationalist binge, where if you think about it, I mean, who among us listening to this right now in the United States can trace their heritage, you know, all the way back to Native American Indians? I'm assuming Elizabeth Warren isn't listening, but, you know, we're all immigrants. And it's kind of a it's kind of a strange thing that you say, all right, so, you know, no more immigrants, even though I'm third generation. That's the height of hypocrisy. And I surf a lot in Santa Cruz. And for those of you who are familiar with surfing area, wherever you surf, there's always this attitude of locals versus, you know, newbies and tourists, and that locals have more rights to waves and locals have more whatever. But kind of the joke in the surfing community is a local is defined as someone who's been there 2 weeks longer than you. So I think the only people who justifiably can express moral indignation for immigration are Native American Indians. After that, we're all newbies.
We're all immigrants to some degree. Yeah. Which I believe is what makes this country so great, by the way, is just everyone's willingness to roll their sleeves up and, you know, get stuck in.
Well, let's hope that that rekindles. How's that?
Yeah, no, I hear where you're coming from. So I'm going to attack these 2 points now, because you did bring up, you brought up surfing a lot quicker than I thought. You know, I am not a surfer. Let me just put that out there. But for probably a 5-year stretch, I did live literally 10-minute walk from Bondi Beach. In Sydney, in Sydney, Australia. And one of my deepest regrets is actually not even taking surf lessons. So, I can see what a culture it is, the surf culture, and how many lessons you were able to impart, you know, based on your surf experience.
I can explain all of life with a surfing analogy.
Yeah.
I am also amazed. So, you live 10 minutes from Bondi and did you ever get in the water at least?
No, plenty got in the water. So, okay. So, right. So you're extracting information from me. So I at that time, my wife gave birth to my second daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I would do is I would put her in the, we used to call it a pram. I don't know what you call it. Yeah. You know, basically the stroller. That's what they call it. So we used to put her in the stroller, and I used to go down to the promenade on Bondi Beach and walk up and down and, look at the scenery, and that I'm not referring to the surf scenery either. And I said, come on, don't worry, I'll take it. Anyway, okay. So over the weekend, I'm driving my daughter. I have three girls. I'm driving my youngest daughter to soccer, and I'm listening to your book preparing for this. And you mention the company Canva.
Yes.
Which I believe has also actually got its origins in Australia.
Yes, it has.
I'd love to hear your thoughts and your views and how that all came about now. But my daughter perked up. She is 11 years old. And she said, no, I know Canva, Dad. We had to design a book cover at school on Canva. So,
seriously?
Yep.
Oh, that is great. Well, we're
tell us about it.
We're all about that 11-year-old book cover market, you know. That's a niche we're going to dominate.
Tell me how that came about, and what does it mean to evangelize a company like that? How do you think about it?
Well, and this is a lesson that many of your listeners can apply to their businesses and their lives. So the story of Canva is that Melanie and Cliff, co-founders, were attending the university in Western Australia, in Perth. And they were teaching other students how to use Adobe products, Illustrator and Photoshop. And they figured out that those products are so difficult and also so expensive. So as the saying goes in Silicon Valley, there must be a better way. And it took a few years to actually come to the fruition of that question. But they produced Canva, and Canva is a cloud-based, online, free graphic design service. So it's like Photoshop for the rest of us. And it enables you to create, as your daughter can tell you, book covers, presentations, social media graphics, flyers, business cards, you name it. And I started my career evangelizing Macintosh, and I'm ending my career evangelizing Canva. And, you know, Macintosh democratized computing, and Canva is democratizing design.
Okay. And would you say you've been successful in evangelizing Canva? Have you brought about a lot of awareness to the product?
Well, in a rare moment of humility, let me tell you, Canva is so good. And the employees there are so good that this is called Guy's Golden Touch. So Guy's Golden Touch is not that whatever I touch turns to gold. Guy's Golden Touch is whatever is gold Guy touches. And I touched Macintosh and I touched Canva. Those are the two bookends of my career. So Canva is extremely successful. You know, millions of active users, hundreds of, not even hundreds, excuse me, roughly 3 million designs a day are created with Canva
wow.
around the world. So, yeah, we, knock on wood, Canva is extremely successful.
Right, and Canva is a unicorn today, I imagine, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it became a unicorn in January of this year. And just the other day, we closed on another round of financing in the United States at a $2.5 billion post-money valuation. If your listeners are familiar with Mary Meeker, she's the venture capitalist out of Kleiner Perkins.
Yeah.
This is the first investment her fund has made.
Wow. That speaks volumes. Well, congrats on that.
Yes,
so,
thank you.
Before we take a break, I want to just talk about Guy's Golden Touch, because I don't think I don't think it quite works the way you're very humble in putting that out. I think what you do touch has turned to gold, or you've been lucky enough or smart enough in our business, either way.
Yeah.
But I think, look, at this point in your career, you've got a massive following. You've got a huge LinkedIn profile. I think you're an influencer on all different social platforms. So if you will, just speak about how that has kind of, how it's come about, but less so to tell us how it's how that changes the way you think of things. And LinkedIn is a great tool, I imagine, that you would evangelize if you had the chance, perhaps.
Yes. So, listen, I've been at it since about 1983, starting in the Macintosh division. So, you know, 83 today, it's like 30 or 40 years of effort. So I'm an instant success. It only took 40 years. And at this point, I am the chief evangelist of Canva. I'm a Mercedes-Benz brand ambassador. And I'm in the kind of reaping mode of my life as opposed to sowing. So that's where I am. And this Guy's Golden Touch, it's my explanation. You know, people ask me, well, what's the key to evangelism? And honestly, the key to evangelism is that you affiliate or create something great, because it's easy to evangelize something great. It's hard to evangelize crap. And so now I wish I could tell you that, you know, you find a great product and the world just rolls over for you. It's not that simple. But man, 80% of the action is finding something great. Now, just as an explanation, evangelism comes from Greek word meaning bringing the good news. And so Canva is good news. It enables everybody to become a great designer. Macintosh was great news. It enabled people to become more creative and productive. So the key is, great news is not hard to sell, let's just say.
Right. It helps. I mean, how big is your platform right now? When you're speaking, how many people are listening, Guy?
Speaking, you mean in an analog...
Just in a broad sense, you know, when you're talking about Mercedes-Benz through your different channels, you know, how big is your reach, essentially?
Well, okay, so a seemingly simple question is not so simple to answer. Right. Because if you added up all the followers on all the platforms, I don't know, 7 million or something like that. But, you know, that's not a true number, because I swear... You know, a lot of those people, they may have followed me 5 years ago. It's not clear that they're actively on social media anymore.
I agree.
Right. And who the hell knows? Half of those people may now be Russian bots. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I wish I could tell you that, if I tell everybody, okay, you know, buy this phone or buy this Mercedes or use Canva, I wish I could tell you that 7 million people the next day do that, because, man, that would be useful.
That is the golden touch, yeah.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. So I'm not Kim Kardashian, okay? but, you know, I mean, it's better than not having 7 million followers.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Listen, we're going to take a short break. When we come back on our next part, you know, again, so much wisdom in the book. I'm just going to hit you with a few elements from the book that I would like your quick comments on. But we'll be right back.